Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 80 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I talked to Lawrence La Pianta. I'm sure I'm saying his last name incorrectly. It's an Italian last name. He is from Cherry Street Barbecue in Toronto, Canada. They have two locations. They have their location they've had for a number of years, as well as their new location is in Assemblies Hall, which is really cool. He talks about both locations. His background isn't barbecue, which is similar to a lot of people, but he got the bug. He talks about the different classes that he took. He went out to 17th Street Barbecue in Murfreesboro, Illinois. They have an amazing class about kind of learning the barbecue business. And he went to that, and he got to meet a lot of the great barbecue people. And this is, I'll put links to all those things in the show notes as well as a blog, because it is really interesting. And that's a way, if you're interested in opening a barbecue joint and you don't have the knowledge, you go to these classes and you network and you learn, and you learn from masters, the guys who have been doing it forever. So that's a cool aside. That's a cool part of this. But he talks about growing his business and how quickly they were able to construct and get the restaurant going, which is phenomenal. But it's because of his TV and film background. And then we talk about Brisket King in New York, which he went to and he won. And he talks about the Big Apple Barbecue Party. He talks about his relationship with Billy Journey and other barbecue people. And it's a great interview. And at the end, in the YouTube version of this, we do a little tour of his restaurant, as well as the outside area and the pits. And that's awesome. I love that kind of stuff. And I know you guys love that too. Well, thank you, Lawrence. I do appreciate it. Thank you guys. I dig making them, and I love learning about the barbecue world. I hope you guys do too. If you're liking these too, please subscribe so they can all pop up in your feed, and enjoy this. But I want to get into your background. I want to get into your two spots. One spot, is it a food hall? Kind of like a big...
Yeah, basically what it is that we were approached about almost a year and a half ago now. And it was, the concept was they're going to bring together a bunch of like real restaurants. So there's no chains at all in this place. Cool. It's all real restaurants, real chefs. It's chef driven. So we kind of, you know, create our menus. We've got anonymity with whatever we want to do, as long as we stay within our genre, right? Like, you know, there's a taco place right next to me. I'm not going to start doing Tex-Mex because it really doesn't, you know, no. I could collaborate all the time, but you wouldn't do that, right? So we do straight barbecue.
Okay. You stay in your lane. So like,
exactly. Everyone stays in their lane. We play together, we cross lanes and we collaborate. But, but other than that, we stick to what we do.
Yeah. You're not going to do like barbecue pizza or anything like that.
No, but we often use, I'll cook up. I mean, for me, barbecue is anything cooked on wood. So I do my own style of porchetta and all the rest of this stuff. So often there's a pizza place there, so we'll cook stuff up and we'll share it with them and throw it on their pizzas, and yeah, so
that's great.
We do barbecue pizza, I guess.
in a sense, well, I guess we kind of have jumped into it, and I'll kind of explain in the intro what we were talking about. But yeah, but Lawrence, first off, thank you so much for taking the time and getting this, making sure that this got set up, because I've been meaning to talk to you for a long time, and I've been very curious because there's not a lot of barbecue or American style barbecue in Canada. So
it's growing.
It's growing, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of guys cooking, you know, a lot of barbecue out west, Alberta, and out for the west. I got a guy who I opened up this place with, who's got a place now out in Tofino.
Oh, really?
Right down on the water, and he's doing great, and he's got his second location set up on a campground, and wow, he's having a really good time with that.
So. Is it Texas style?
He's kind of, I mean, I guess, yeah, I've always been, like, I obviously love, that's where my love grew, mm-hmm, for barbecue, was my trips down in Texas.
Yeah.
I always try to say it's Toronto style, because I grew up in a very multicultural neighborhood, and I cook a lot of barbecue with a lot of different friends, and they're from a variety of backgrounds. Wow. So Texas style barbecue is something that I hold, you know, close to my heart. But realistically, because I'm cooking in Toronto, I've always been hesitant to fly the Texas flag, although I'm a huge proponent, and gotcha, I love everything Texas, and that's kind of what fueled my fire, which was so great about doing that whole thing in Hot Luck and getting to be down and cooking. Even though I was cooking with Billy, it was cooking in Aaron's kitchen. I was like, this is like getting invited to the Vatican.
Without a doubt. And it's got to have some, there's got to be some pinch me moments in that whole situation where like, I can't believe where I am right now.
That's really where like my love for barbecue started. Aaron had just opened a new location, and it was a trip down. It was my third trip down to Texas. And I made it to Austin. I went and tried the food there. I was like, you know, I'd done everything, and he was the last stop before I came home. And I was just like, you got to be kidding me. This is unreal.
Did you grow up with like a culture of barbecue around you, or did you grow up in Toronto?
Yeah, I grew up in Toronto, first generation Canadian. Like, my parents immigrated here in 63. So okay. My first language wasn't even English when I grew up.
What was it?
We grew up speaking Italian in the house. So it's kind of funny. A lot of my staff will say my first language still isn't English. But I got strong influences from, like, so I grew up in a very multicultural neighborhood. Most of my friends were Chinese, Filipino, from the Caribbean. So I grew up with really a mishmash of, like, of influences and styles and all the rest of it. Like, I was the kid going to school trading my prosciutto and provolone sandwich for, like, a peanut butter and jelly, because I was like, what's that? That looks amazing.
And they're like, what's that? That looks amazing.
Yeah, they're like, why is your sandwich so big? It's bigger than my head. I'm like, I don't know. That's the way my parents made it.
That's cool. Were you guys grilling at home or even any live fire?
We're doing a lot of one of my strongest influences is actually one of my closest friends, Keith, who's Filipino. And they used to cook whole pigs, like lechons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Lechon, yeah, that's a big deal.
All the time. Yeah. And he also, we worked at FedEx when we were in university.
Okay.
And he worked at the airport, and I worked at another station. And on weekends, I would drive to the airport and do that shuttle run. And he'd be calling me going, hey, you know, pilot so-and-so came in, because, you know, obviously the main hub's in Memphis, and they would bring up barbecue. This is like pre-9/11. So they would bring up treats for us and all that stuff. He's like, oh, they brought in ribs and all the stuff. And I go in, we're eating these ribs, and I'm like, this is amazing. This is like something I haven't had before here. We cooked. There was some barbecue places around, but no one was doing like really authentic stuff and really activating the game. So
it makes a difference when you have authentic barbecue or a specific regional barbecue. It does change.
Yeah, it was completely different from anything we'd ever tasted. Like, this was no boiled ribs and then thrown on a grill. This was like real, you know, wood-fired cooking.
So we did that. So. So you would do. So would you even cook the lechon, or would you guys order it in? Because I think a lot of people have.
No, we would cook it. We would cook it. We would order it in. Like, usually we would be cooking it, though, and we'd cook in his backyard, and it was awesome.
So that kind of sparked a little, like you said.
Yeah, that was like early. You know, that was late 90s, early 2000s. Okay. And then I guess it was kind of funny, because a few days ago I recently moved into a new place and I had a box full of stuff, and I was going through all these old receipts, and I found a box full of receipts from like 2005. And it was like, I was like, oh my God, this is from my first like brisket cook.
Really?
It was like $300 I spent to cook a brisket. Because finding a whole packer was impossible.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I think I ended up spending like $100 at the time to get a whole packer from like some specialty butcher. And I bought like a $99, like half price tin can smoker from our local, you know, what would be, it was Canadian Tire. Okay. But it's like our Lowe's kind of thing, or okay. Home Depot was here. And so I bought the smoker for half price, and I bought the brisket, and I spent like $100 on wood that was from the U.S. I bought it at some specialty barbecue store, and that's where I found the receipt. And it was like 2005, and that was like my first ever brisket cook, and it was interesting to say.
Well, so what made you want to cook brisket? Was it something like, had you and your friend been talking, or is this your? Like,
yeah, we'd been talking about wanting to do cook a brisket, and it'd be so cool, and we got our hands on some beef ribs, and we did this cook that was probably, I don't know, a couple $100 worth of just meat. And,
how did it turn out?
Oh, it was horrible. it was inedible. Like, we tried to convince ourselves it was edible, but it was just so bad.
Doesn't that's what's tough too with barbecue, when you spend a lot of money and it turns out terrible. That's like, it's kind of disheartening at first. You have to get over that hump.
You know what? We had a good laugh about it. We're like, this is, you know, we're trying to convince ourselves it was good, but I was just like, thinking back, I was like, it was like, we were 9 hours into the cook, and I'm like, this brisket's got to be ready. Not even close.
Yeah, no, it feels like a long time when you first started. Oh, gosh. So then at that point, were you thinking, hey, you know, down the road, I want to open a restaurant? Like, was that something, or did you go to culinary school?
I was working in film at the time. I did locations and film and commercials. Okay. So we were just, I was super busy in that. But what it did is allowed me the opportunity to travel. I would do long stints of work. Like, you go, you know, 30, 40 days on multiple jobs. And then all of a sudden you have a chance. You got a week off. I'm like, I'm going somewhere barbecue related. So
nice.
I would fly. The first trip down to Houston, I think, was 2007. Okay. Yeah. 2007 I went down and actually took a course at Gator Pit.
Oh, really?
down in Houston, which it's funny because I've gone back and I've watched some of the other videos now that you've done with other Pitmasters. And some other guys that you've interviewed have done the same course.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, I was with a gentleman named Conrad Haskins. I just found out recently through one of the interviews that he had passed away, actually. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But I went down and did that course, and that's when I did my first trip down to Lockhart. And I went to Blacks and Smitty's and Kreutz's and experienced all that stuff. And it was amazing.
Yeah, like, yeah. I was going to say, it probably was amazing, dude. It was amazing to me.
It was like, this is incredible. So I got to figure out a way to make better barbecue.
Yeah. So, and also just seeing the pits and seeing all that, it's and the way that the service and everything, it's so crazy.
I think what impressed me the most is the service and the pits and all that, but it was the culture behind it. Like, and the way that people were just like, it was funny because there's two worlds, right? Because I compete and I cook in the restaurant, and I find that when you get around really great barbecue cooks, there are no real secrets. They're great at sharing stuff. It's just the competition guys who, you know, call it chicken and yeah, like, yeah, it's my secret. I let it rest on a table for 4 hours or whatever.
That's okay. So funny.
Yeah, that whole competition culture and the restaurant culture of got people are like, I find totally different.
Completely. Both yeah.
Really great people, but all the pitmasters I know in the States, there's no secrets. Mm-hmm. It's the only competition guys kind of figure that they have some kind of secret.
Like the best of the best don't have secrets. Isn't there, I think even Billy Journey has like secrets are for suckers, I think he said.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And Billy's been a big influence on my cooking and the way I see barbecue as well. We share a lot of the same ideologies and stuff. So
that's awesome.
We've cooked together quite a bit.
So when you went to, you went to Texas, did you go to Austin from there? Was that your first trip?
No, that was my first trip to Austin was 2009. I went down there. And was it, 2009 or 2010, I can't remember. But went down, and that's when I made it to Aaron's at the end. And I'd done mostly Austin that time. I actually landed in Dallas, went to a bunch of places in Dallas, and then drove down to, did the 4-hour drive to Austin. And I was supposed to go see Wayne over at Louis Miller. And I ended up getting a speeding ticket on the way down to Austin. Which is a whole other story. And on my way back, I had to actually go and appear in front of the judge and pay it.
Really?
Before I left.
Like a small town thing or something? Or?
Oh, yeah. It was in Alvarado, I think. That it was like literally, and it was so funny because I pull into this town square, and it felt like the town square in Back to the Future.
Uh-huh.
Like there's the old clock tower that didn't work, and there's tumbleweeds blowing around. And I walk in, there's this massive lineup, but it's like the city hall office as well. So people are paying their property taxes or water taxes or whatever. Yeah. And then there's this little window. And I was just like, hi, I'm the Canadian guy. I don't know any better. I got to pay a ticket. They're like, oh, you're at the right window.
But then you did. So you didn't make it down to Louis Miller?
So I didn't get down. I went and saw Wayne like a couple years later, actually. I finally made it down to see him. But that was an interesting trip. So since then, I've been back probably about a handful of times.
Nice. That's important. It kind of seems like that's like a pattern for a lot of people is to keep going back and then meeting different people and creating like a network of people to talk to too.
Yeah. No, and absolutely. And it was like one of the best things I ever, like coolest things I ever did. I remember was going down to National Barbecue Convention down in Fort Worth there 2 years ago. And Sam was there, Jones, cooking whole hog in Texas. And everyone's like completely like, what are you doing? What's going on here? Blah, blah, blah. So they're like blown away by it. And so Sam and Daniel and myself did a hog cook there for the last day of the festival. And it was like so interesting because even all these Texans were kind of like, you're cooking a whole hog? That's crazy. What are you doing?
Still, it's a big deal in Texas. There's a few people that will do it, but it's just, I think if you cook whole hog anywhere, it's a spectacle.
It is. It's awesome. So getting to do that was amazing as well. So I've been very fortunate.
So what was the next step? But was it still in the back of your mind? I might open a restaurant or do catering. Is that kind of what?
So I came back and in, was it 20, I guess I just back and forth. I'd been doing a lot of classes down actually at 17th Street too with Mike and Amy Mills.
Nice.
So I went down there and did that. I came back and I helped a friend open up another, like a small bar. Actually it was a Southern style comfort food restaurant and they wanted to barbecue on the menu. So I left film for almost a year and I went and I worked in the kitchen there. And basically it started as, hey Lawrence, can you do barbecue on Saturdays? And I was like, sure, no problem. And he's like, oh, we don't really have a plan for Sundays, but we should do barbecue on Sundays. So I'm like, okay, let's do barbecue all weekend. And then it turned into just like, you know, 70% of the menu was barbecue 7 days a week. So I did that for a year and then I went back into film while I was trying to, at that time I was already actively looking for a place to do a barbecue place. To do a barbecue joint, and I knew that I wanted to cook on wood, mm-hmm. so I needed to find a very specific place where I could do that. So I knew I had to be a bit of a destination, but I still wanted to be close to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
But with my background doing locations, I kind of knew the entire city, like the back.
Yeah, of that's hand. Actually a great. Yeah,
I had my eye on where I am now, well before. Oh, sorry about that. Let me pop in.
Is that like your old timey phone call?
Yeah, exactly. I've got a lot of nostalgia, including my ringer. So I had my eye on the place where I am now because it's to my downtown location when I deliver it takes 10 minutes in traffic. Oh, wow. So close I am to the core of Toronto, but yet I feel like I'm in the middle of nowhere.
That's awesome.
Down in the Portlands, all there is it's all the movie studios are down here.
Oh, really?
And there's a music event venue, and there's us, and there's another restaurant just north of here. But really, there's a lot of activity in the area, but there's not a lot of development. It's still very industrial.
Wow, that's awesome. So did you go down to 17th Street prior to opening this restaurant, like just prior, or?
Oh, yeah, no. This was back in I think the first class was like 2012.
Wow, so that's a big deal to go there without having a restaurant. It's just because you get so much knowledge.
And that's where I ended up meeting Billy and Sam and Pat and the guys from the shed and Wayne. They were all teaching down there at the time. So Amy had them as lecturers.
That's so great. That's so worth it.
Yeah, it was absolutely. I got to cook with them down there, hang out, and then I just made it a point to go visit all of them. Actually, the only person I haven't been to visit is, it's embarrassing, but I haven't been down to see Sam, so I got to make
sure. Neither have I. That's something that's in the next couple months.
Maybe I'll meet you there.
But yeah, we should meet there. We have to go to both places, but yeah.
Yeah, go to both places and just,
so much around there.
It's so amazing. And with everything that's happened down there and, getting nominated for James Beard and all that, it's so happy for Sam.
Have you been to any classes with Rodney?
No, I haven't. Yet he was actually in New York at the block party, but we didn't get a chance to cross paths. He had just won the James Beard, so he was busy. He had all of his time was booked up. So
yeah,
he didn't
I'm sure have the media time. Was going, was going
yeah, a little didn't have much time to chat. So I wasn't about to try to create, build up a conversation with somebody who I've never met before in the middle of that circus.
That's true. You know, what's funny is that I kept my Twitter feed was all full of Rodney Scott's, and I'm like, God, everybody's talking. But then I realized I pretty much follow every, it's barbecue.
Yeah. Stuff. You're like, wow, it's really blown up. It's like, well, my entire feed is barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah. I always think that for almost anything I see. I'm like, wow, everyone's posting stuff about Daniel. I'm like, wait, that's because it's all.
Yeah, it makes sense because everyone I followed.
Yeah, because I've sort of filtered my entire, the way I look at the world through my.
Yeah, I used to have my Twitter feed split up between stuff the NBA says, stuff the NFL says, and stuff that barbecue says. Oh, and it was each feed was just filled with those people. And it made my life a little easier.
But now I think I follow too many people, so my feed's just a mess. But you had that location in mind. When did you secure it?
I secured it back in spring of 2016. So we're only in our second full year here. It's our third summer. So we started summer of 2016, we opened to a great weather wise because I've got a massive patio. I got a 100-seat patio, and I got 50 seats inside. So the patio is really important to us to allow us to feed more people. And when we opened, it was weird because I got the keys. I probably pretty much had 3 weeks to open the place, and I had already a bunch of restaurateur friends in Toronto because of the film thing, because I'd filmed at their restaurants or I'd met them or worked with them, and they're all like, listen, 3 weeks, it can't be done, it ain't gonna happen, don't get upset, don't set your expectations too high. And then I turn around and talk to film friends and I'm like, hey, I've got 3 weeks to open this place. And they're like, it's like 3 months for you. And I'm like, okay, sure, no problem. And we literally got her open in just over 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy.
3 weeks to open. And we basically signed the paperwork. And I had a very close friend of mine who's an art director, a designer, who basically designed the interior of the place. And then I reached out to one of the film set carpentry companies. And they were like, yeah, we've actually got a lull for a week. So they knocked out all of my stuff in about a week. And as soon as I was done the demo, they started the install. We started doing the install of the stuff probably 6 days after we got the keys.
Really? Oh, that's crazy.
And we had a lot of work to do. And I've got three shipping containers, 20-foot containers in the back that pretty much house all my cookers. And we had those installed. One of them is now my bar and it faces the patio.
Okay.
So it's super cool. And, worked with the guys at the container company was actually out by the airport, which is the other side of town. And now they're my neighbors. They're just down the street. So we see them all the time.
Oh, that's cool.
We're working on more projects. I just love the whole container thing. It's unlimited what you do with them.
It is. It's fascinating. They're starting to kind of do a little bit of that here, and there's right. like there's some different like container parks, and I know they've done stuff in Austin. That's right. It's a good use yeah. too, like to recycle those and.
100%. They're all decommissioned, yeah. but they all work for whatever it is you need. You can build them into anything.
So yeah, yeah.
It's super cool. I'm actually looking at getting another one potentially and putting it out by the pits, but making it a reefer. So that basically I'd get all my proteins delivered straight into there. I can make all my sausage and butchery and all that stuff right outside by the pits and walk out from my fridge and load it right in the pit, which would be awesome.
What type of pits do you have?
So I've got two Langs that I basically towed up from Brooklyn. I got them off of Billy when Billy got Aaron's pits, then he had more pits than he needed at the time.
Okay.
Now he probably needs all of them back, but, I took those off his hands in 2015. So I had the pits for about a year before I opened the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So I've got two 108s. I got a kitchen model and the trailer version. And then I've also got an oiler as well.
That's nice. Did you go down to Billy's place to test them and play with them a little bit to practice, or did? Well,
the Langs were kind of, it was what I learned how to cook on, really. I mean, I remember going to the first block party that Billy was in, and it was literally, it's, you know, we spent all night cooking on them. We did beef ribs that first year, and I think we did like 4,500 pounds of beef ribs for the block party that year. Wow. It was insane. And we had four of them going at the time. It was crazy. There were four pits going, beef ribs going nonstop, loading for service, pulling them, loading again for the next day. It was fire by baptism. It was baptism by fire for sure.
Did you work with Billy? Was that prior to your restaurant opening, or was that your first year at the restaurant?
I think the first block party that he did was 14. Yeah. So it was probably about a year before I bought the cookers off of them, and 2 years before I opened Cherry Street.
So what was the reception at first when you guys opened?
We opened, and it was such great weather, and people were like, what's this new place down by the water? And it's, like I said, it's a very active neighborhood in terms of cyclists and dog parks and all that stuff. And people were coming in, and they had no idea. And then they'd come out back, and, you know, we probably, to my detriment, did more pit tours than I should have at the beginning, because everyone's like, what? I've never seen this. This is amazing. And it's so funny, too, because it's so impressive to people who aren't around, and I take for granted because we do it every day, mm-hmm. like what it is. But, you know, they look at the firebox and they look at the cookers and they're like,
it's a big deal.
It's amazing. And it smells amazing. I'm like, yeah, it is awesome. So, you know, it's open and close. And I'm like, all of a sudden my briskets were taking 18 hours. I'm like, guys, stop opening the cookers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That is true. That's a good, no one really thinks about that part.
Yeah, because we would load sometimes, you know, depending on our cook schedule and what we need, what time we need stuff available, we could load as early as 2 p.m. for the next day once we pulled all of our stuff.
Wow.
Or we could be loading between 5 and 6 or between 5 and 7. And then, you know, that's dinner time. Restaurant's packed. Everyone's like, hey, can I see what you're cooking? And
yeah, yeah. So,
all of a sudden, I'm like, the next morning, I'm like, why did the briskets take literally 18 hours?
What was the menu like at the beginning? It's the same menu you have now?
Pretty much. We opened with like just, you know, the staples. We had brisket, pulled pork, sides and babies. And we put a burger on the menu because when we were opening we called it the contractor burger originally. We were trimming briskets and I was just putting the trim right through the grinder and making patties. And the guys are like, guys, man, you got to put a burger on the menu. And I'm like, it's really going to mess up counter style service in a barbecue place when you got a burger. To many people's suggestion of not doing it, I put it on anyways because it's a great burger and I think it's awesome.
And you still have the burger, right? I think I've
still got it. It's called the Double Stack Cherry Mac because it's oddly similar to the world's best selling burger. it's essentially an homage to the Big Mac.
Awesome. That's your version. Now, what's are you on Cherry Street? Oh, yeah, you are.
So we're on Cherry Street. So the building we're in was built in 1910. It was a TD Bank originally.
Oh.
And it was a TD Bank between 1910 and 1953 when my present landlord, who still owns the building, purchased it and turned it into a diner. And it kind of fed – this area was heavy with metals, and it's in the Portland. So, back when the shipping – business was really busy in Toronto. It was a pretty bustling hub, you know, between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. kind of thing. So they opened up a lunch breakfast spot, and they essentially fed all the people who worked in the area.
And what are your hours right now?
Now we open at 11 a.m. Okay. And we, you know, every day we run till most of the stuff runs out. We do a double cook, except for brisket that comes off every morning. We usually do two rib cooks of both kinds, turkey, chicken, all that stuff's continuously. We have enough to get us into lunch, and then we're cooking and pulling again for 3-4 o'clock to get us into dinner.
Now, you make your own sausage too?
We make our own sausage. Actually, when I did Brisket King in New York, I brought down a sausage because I cooked down at home. I borrowed one of Billy's cookers to cook for Brisket King.
Okay.
So I brought down, I made the sausage and I had him try it. And Billy's always deadly honest with me, right? And he looked at me and he kind of was like, he's going to knock the sausage. And he's like, this has got to go on your turn in. You got to turn this in with your brisket. Really? And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's really good. I'm like, awesome. And then that's what we went down and we did 800 pounds of sausage in New York for the block party. So Billy did his sandwich, his chopped brisket with cheese sauce and our sausage on it for the for what we served this year at
block party. I remember seeing pictures of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So we that was a lot of sausage. I took my kitchen manager down, who is an amazing sausage maker, and he's just like, I'll dream up ideas and say, hey, I want to make this, and he's just like, you want to put all that in a sausage? I'm like, yeah. He's like, okay. And we work on it. And it, you know, we've had some fails, but most of them have been just like home runs. So
what type of sausage was that?
We do. So we've done, we had a, during a football season, we run a Frito pie sausage. Oh. So we essentially take an entire, all the ingredients of a Frito pie and put it into a sausage. Oh, and it's awesome.
I've never heard of that. I don't know why. I've heard all the funky sauce that, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. So we take, I really wanted the crunch from it. Obviously, for the when you make sausage, you know it's not going to work. But we were putting the Frito, actually the actual chip works more as a seasoning in the sausage. So then when we dressed it, we then served it again like a Frito pie. So we put chili back on top of it, cheese sauce on top of it. But when you eat the sausage on its own, it's got all the components and all the elements of a Frito pie. It's really, really good.
Ah, that sounds so great. That sounds amazing. Yeah. But that's during football season.
Yeah, we run that. So we do like we'll do.
Is that your football season or our football season?
For me, there's only one. It's NFL. Okay. I had family in Pittsburgh growing up, so I spent a lot of summers in Pittsburgh. So okay. I've been a Steelers fan since I can remember. So
yeah, my cousin's a diehard Steelers fan. Like any kind, if you get him a gift, you can get him a anything Steelers, it'll be happy.
Yeah, he'll be like awesome, black and yellow, perfect.
Yeah, towel, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Who doesn't have 20 terrible towels?
That's awesome. Okay. So it's during that time. So do you have a standard sausage that you have on the menu all the time?
We do. Right now we do. Usually we run an all pork sausage and we run an all beef sausage. Okay. Right now we're just running an 80-20 because it's just we don't even have enough time to make as much sausage as we need. So I was like, let's compact it down into one sausage so that we always have it. So we're doing almost like a traditional hot cut. It's 80-20 beef pork with jalapeno and cheddar.
Wow, that sounds nice.
It's a really, really good sausage. So we've been to tweak it for about a week, but then we've got it to a point where now it's just sausage making is like baking. It's like a science, right?
So, oh, for sure. Yeah. And you can mess it up pretty quick.
It's funny because I just, growing up in an Italian household, we used to make tons of sausage. And I'm like, my parents would be like, one day you'll thank me for this. And I'm like, oh yeah, now I do.
Are you making sausage in casing or like loose sausage?
In casing.
Back in the day when you were a kid.
Back in the day, because we would also make like cacciatore and a bunch of like we would dry ones as well. So we'd pack them away under weights and whatnot and make soppressatas and cacciatores and all that stuff. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You also have specials too, right?
Yeah, we do. And that's kind of when I bring in like it's great because that's what I mean about being like Toronto barbecue. I can do, you know, I've done Filipino stuff. I've done like longanisa sausages and I've done – you know, I do jerk items and I do Italian influenced stuff. Like I do a porchetta sandwich, which is my style. So I cook a whole shoulder, instead of cooking it like you would a porchetta with the crispy skin. Mm-hmm. So because it's cooked like that, we have our own house cured, pancetta. So we'll crisp the pancetta that acts as the crackling. Mm-hmm. So it's the pancetta on top of the, you know, my version of porchetta with some, rapini or broccoli rabe, downstairs. And it's just like, and I do my own like giardiniera as well. So it's like a giardiniera aioli that we put on the bun, but I serve it on a Martin's potato roll. So I keep it.
Yeah. Classic. Oh my gosh. You know, what's funny is I have a friend who has an animation company in Toronto, and so I kept telling him, you got to go to Cherry Street. And so finally, like I said, I'm talking to him on Tuesday, because I mentioned, like, I'm talking to you, and then we end up not talking. But I said, you have to get out. And, like, just your menu, I think if anybody listens to this, they will be out there, like, in an hour, because it sounds so great.
Well, we do, and we really like getting creative with stuff. Right now we're working on some stuff with beef tongue, and that's going to be coming out very soon. We're working on we've got a big like chef's dinner coming up with a couple other restaurants, and we want to really knock it out of the park with a tongue dish, because I think it's something that hasn't been done. Like, I grew up, my parents were first generation. They worked really hard. So by no means was I a street kid, but it was a very humble upbringing. And we ate stuff like, we ate brain burgers, and, we had tongue, and we had all these things that, I think, are coming. They're definitely back, but it's a lot harder to find. And I think if people get exposed to it and it's cooked with a lot of care, it can be delicious.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know if the brain burgers on the menu here, but
brain burgers haven't swept the nation. haven't swept any nation.
They have a very unique texture too. I don't know how many people are going to be in love with them, fall in love with them.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I've ever had brain before. I've had almost everything else, but I haven't had brain. Is it spongy or softer?
It's very soft. It's like think of it as like really really, really soft, melted. It's a very buttery texture.
Okay.
But because it was funny, and then I'm the youngest of four, and we'd be having lunch, and whoever ended up getting, because inevitably someone would get the pellet, because their cows were, the way they take our cows. So someone would always get the pellet in their brain burger. Whoever got the pellet had to do dishes.
I think I know someone that when they have deer, when they have venison stew, or they have some kind of venison chili, whoever gets the pellet ends up having to, it's the same thing.
Yeah. So it was pretty fun.
Tell me about Brisket King.
So Brisket King was awesome. It was probably one of the hardest cooks I've ever done, though. We started, so the event starts at 5 p.m, so I tried to back all of my times out so that I could have rest enough and travel with it, and it'd be hot because there's no warming mechanisms there or anything. So, I had to travel through. I had to go from Red Hook up to like almost north of Williamsburg in rush hour traffic. It was like a 55-minute drive. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I thought I was going to be late. So, but that night was also like a horrible, horrible rainstorm. Like, the weather started turning at about 2-3 in the morning. And, I started wrapping at about 6, and it was horrible. It was like, rain was coming in sideways. It was killing I'm fighting the fire. I'm trying to wrap my briskets. It's super cold. I was just like, oh, why?
Yeah, I know. The temperature is not.
I'm sitting there cursing all the guys getting to cook inside their own kitchens and not be outside the elements. But I'm like, I got to do it. So we ended up it was a very difficult cook. It was an awesome cook, though. I basically coddled 15 briskets all night long.
And what exactly is Brisket King for people that don't know?
So it's a competition in New York where they invite out a bunch of restaurants. It's pretty much open to anyone who wants to compete. And a variety of people will cook briskets in various ways. It's supposed to be almost all of them are barbecue, but some do other dishes, and they're just ways to be innovative. They really want creativity with the brisket. The majority of the people who are there are mostly barbecue people. And I think there was 22 people competing this year.
Okay.
So it was a lot of fun, and we put out brisket that I was super, super proud of. I mean, it was perfect. Everything about it was awesome. And it wasn't just like I had one perfect brisket. It was all of them. I was like, literally, because Nick Solaris was one of the judges, one of the main judges, and there's some sitting at the table, and I'm like, man, I don't know what to do. Like, if I almost want to invite the judges to my table and say, not to be, bold or anything, but go, you know what, guys, just pick any brisket. I'll unwrap it and slice it for you. Like, they're all perfect.
That's amazing. That doesn't happen often.
No. And so I ended up going up. So I carved this great platter for them. And that's the picture that I posted on Instagram. It's actually Nick's picture. He took that. And I presented it. I sliced a brisket tip to tail. I gave them lean. I gave them fatty. I gave them everything. I put a bunch of garnish on the board. I sliced up a bunch of the sausage. and just put a big mound of meat in front of the judges, and they're all just like, wow.
That's cool.
And they ate it, and everyone was really impressed with it. So I was pretty proud of it.
And you got a crown?
I got a crown. I got my Burger King crown, and then I also got the amazing trophy that they have. It was kind of funny because they gave me the trophy when I was down there doing block party with Billy, and he's like, nice, because all I got was the damn crown.
Oh, yeah, because he won, right? Did he win?
Yeah, Billy won, I think, 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's so funny. So,
It was pretty special to get it at the block party with everyone there.
Are you going to be doing that every year, you think?
Up until now, I've done it every year other than last year. Last year, because we had a bunch of stuff booked. We do a lot of caterings and a lot of weddings and stuff. Mm. And I had back-to-back caterings last year, that first weekend in June, because it's always the same weekend.
Yeah.
So I couldn't make it down last year. I love going down there. I get a chance to see everybody and hang out. And
yeah, it looks like a great time.
It's a lot of fun. Like it's my, you know, what do I do when I go on vacation? I go cook more barbecue.
Yeah, but you go with your friends, your barbecue family, which is.
I always said I would do it for free, and it's true. So
that's awesome. When did you open the new place, at the food hall?
So that happened we opened that in early January of this year.
Yeah.
And so the downtown location is awesome. So everything basically comes out of Cherry. Everything's cooked here.
Okay.
We transport hot downtown. And we essentially, you know, we try to keep it. It's funny because with, you know, the nature of barbecue, you sell out. And it's like when we first opened, we had no idea of numbers or how busy it was going to be. And it just, as soon as it opened, it's like anything in any major city. Everyone's got to try it and everyone's got to, you know, hang out. So we had lineups every day and we sold out every day. And it was amazing. So now we've, you know, we very quickly, we got a grasp on numbers. And so we will always do a double load. So we'll sometimes run out, you know, right after lunch, but then we'll make another run down to it's called Chef's Assembly. And we'll reload them for dinner service down there.
That's got to be a lot of coordinating for this location and then also for that location.
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because I never thought my past career would prepare me for this, but all I did was logistics and location. So I was kind of like figuring out schedules and timing and all the rest of it.
That's perfect.
It's kind of coordinating stuff is what I did for years. So now it's just, you know, if something happens, we figure out a way to fix it really quickly. I don't live in a no world. It's a yes world. So it's like, hey, can you do this? And I just say yes. Yeah. So I'm like, and then it's kind of like, you know, figure it out.
Yeah, you figure it out on the fly, which is totally doable.
Yeah, it's funny because some people are good with it. Some people aren't. Some people like real structure and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of something that I try to create as well. I give everyone our schedules and we try to get caterings up on the board as soon as possible. But, you know, especially with my background in film, often I may get a call today and say, hey, can you do 100 brisket sandwiches for 8 o'clock tonight? And I'm like, yes.
Ah, that's great.
We'll figure it out.
Are you doing stuff for the production companies too? Is that kind of
I do. Yeah. I still do a lot of, I'll do catered lunches. Yeah. So we go out and we'll do full spreads for the crews, anywhere from 60 to 160 people, depending on crew size and who's all there. So we do that a lot. But in the summer, I try to do – it's when it's busiest, obviously, in the city. But I try to – I can't do as much as I'd like because we're busy with our customers in the restaurant, and that's primary. And we have a lot of large catering orders. So I find myself, you know, myself and my managers will be doing various drops around Toronto 3 or 4 times a day.
Wow.
After, you know, once we basically – I'll get everything set up here. I usually do the run downtown, set up assembly so that they're ready for 11:30. But in that time, we may drop off 3 or 4 other large orders to bank buildings, trading floors. We got a lot of corporate clients, which is awesome. So there's nothing better than a bunch of guys in suits or an entire office of people all dressed up, just diving into barbecue. It's amazing.
That means a lot. That's kind of like a classic look for barbecue because a lot of the old school places in Texas or in Memphis it's the guys like coming from their office, coming down, having a sloppy sandwich.
Like I remember we did one of the first large caterers we did for just guys who were fans of ours. we pulled in, and it's the entire trading floor, and they're like behind glass. It was like a room like NASA. And they literally, we got off the elevator with the cart full of food, and they just, it was a slow clap. Like the entire room just got up and just started clapping. And I'm like, this is awesome.
That's really cool. I wanted to ask what kind of sides you had. Do you have classic sides?
Yeah, we do a classic queso mac and cheese. We do an apple cider vinegar slaw. We do a ranch style potato salad. We have our chili, which is made from ain't no beans and chili. It's just ground brisket and four types of chili peppers.
Oh, that's perfect.
A base, yeah, it's really, really good. We've got the, obviously, I'm trying to make sure I got everything covered.
Yeah, you're looking at the board.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at the board. We do a veg version of our brisket beans, of our burnt end beans.
Oh, cool.
Our beans are awesome. People have them, and they're like, these are not a side dish. So we get people who often will just order them by the quart and take them home. And
yeah, I was going to say, I would, for sure. The chili, too.
They're so good. Like, my you know, Saturday mornings, I'll come in, and I'll just take some beans and put a fried egg on top with some avocado, and it's the best.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty much it's everything you need.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. I love that. We were doing like, we called it barbecue brunch, and it was basically anything you wanted with an egg on top. It was a bit of a joke.
I've never had brisket with an egg on top though.
Oh, chopped brisket with an egg on top. And we put, instead of doing like pickles and onions, we put sofrito on top and cheese. And it's so good. The peppers and onions on chopped brisket with an egg. It's really, really good.
This is just killing me. Like, it's number one, LA doesn't have a lot of barbecue like options. We have different barbecue, but also too, this sounds like you're killing it there, and it just sounds so fun. Like you're doing it with passion, but also just with like a joy, which is
you gotta love what you do. I mean, I left a great career that I'd spent 20 years building to cook barbecue, and I was like, everyone's like, "Are you happy?" I'm like, "I'm super happy." They're like, "Well, you look happy." Yeah. They're like,
"You're glowing." Like, it's crazy.
It's a lot of fun. You know, every day you get up and you look forward to coming to work, and I have an amazing team. I've got great staff. From whether it's front of house to back of house, my guys outside in the pits are working really hard. It's funny because I get guys coming in who are traditional cooks and they went to culinary school, and I'm like, they'll come in and they're like, "I really want to learn barbecue." I'm like, "Are you sure?" I say, "Because it's not easy." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "We don't throw stuff in an oven and forget about it." I'm like, you got to go out there. You got to work the fire. It's a lot of heavy lifting. It's chopping wood. I'm like, it's all these things. It's not flipping pans, right?
Because I've got that's satisfying.
A ton of respect for chefs and for cooks. But then when these guys come in, they have no idea what's involved. I'm like, why don't you come in for a couple of days? And I said, I'll even pay you. I don't expect you to stage. I said, but see what's involved and see if this is really what you want to do, because you got to weed out people. Otherwise, you spend a bunch of time training someone for a couple of weeks, and then they're like, "Man, this is way harder than I thought." I'm like, I got tired of hearing, "This is way harder than I thought."
It's like a broken record. That's so funny. But it is a lot more work and a lot more time and a lot more. Yeah, there's so much involved.
It's that hard work and it's that care that makes a better product.
Exactly.
Right. So it's that attention to detail and it's caring about it. I always said, it's like when you have someone out there manning a fire all night long for the entire time the cooker's rolling, you are putting a lot of attention into what you're doing. You know, like, sure, things go wrong sometimes and things may happen, but for the most part, you're going to make a better product because you're actively involved in its development as it cooks, you know, and its progression.
And you've got to respect that too. And that's something too that I think people too also don't realize. That's a lot of people, it seems like barbecue people put photos like, "Hey, I'm staying up all night so you don't have to." But it's true, because a lot of people don't realize what people.
That's why I love, and, you know, we get a lot of, I love the, you know, I call them like the weekend warriors, the guys who cook barbecue once or twice every summer. And they're like, "Yeah, man, I made the best brisket." I'm like, "Okay, now make 60. Make them all perfect.
Every day.
Every day." And then, and it's great. I mean, I love barbecue fans. It's so amazing how people light up and how much they, like I said, with the pit tours, like they come out back and you start showing them the pits and start talking about barbecue, and they start feeling the passion. They start to glow, and they're so happy. And they're like, "Man, can I come hang out?" I'm like, "Yeah, come on, hang out anytime. You want to chop wood? You want to lift briskets and carry them out to the cooker for me? Yeah, no problem. Anytime you want."
That's awesome. Well, I like to stage there sometime too. Like, I can't wait to visit. I really can. But I'd like to spend some time just seeing your process.
Food scene in Toronto has always been great. And now there's some people who are very passionate about barbecue, cooking some barbecue as well. So there's a lot of great reasons to come up to Toronto and pay a visit, especially in a summer like this one. It's pretty magical when the weather's nice. It's awesome. Like, I sit here and I've got, I don't know if you can see it, like one of the best views of, like, out my window of basically the towers there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I mean, it's across from a lot, but I've got the entire skyline, basically. Like, if you watch any sporting event and they've got that opening shot, oh, yeah. come across the water, and you, that's pretty much from where we are.
Oh, that's so, so cool.
So literally, it's funny because I fluctuate between Imperial and Metric all the time. Distance-wise, I'm probably not even, like, 4 miles from the from the core. All
right.
Like, super close. Like I said, like, in traffic, it's 10 minutes to get to the downtown location to get to load in.
Oh, nice.
So after we wrap up, I'm going to load the van up and then head downtown, get them ready, and then head back here and make some catering deliveries.
Nice.
It's like the best bartender in the world.
hey.
And he's an amazing axe thrower. We've got a – I don't know if you've ever heard of like how big axe throwing is getting. It's a place called Battle. And they've got places in Nashville now and Philly and all over the states they're popping up. But they're actually their original locations around the corner from us. And we do a lot of work with them. So I throw axes on Wednesday nights in a league. Just kind of funny. Swing an axe all day and then throw an axe at night.
Oh, that's so cool. That's awesome. Can be, is that something people, the public can throw axes?
If yeah, absolutely. It's a really, especially in Nashville, it's really popular with like groups doing, celebrating either birthdays, stagettes, corporate functions. It's very, very cool. So
I don't know if LA has one. I'm sure they have it somewhere. I have to check this. Check that out.
Is there an LA location? No, eh?
No, but there's other axe companies.
Yeah, there's a couple other there's other camp companies opening up too. It's not just there's the NATL, which is like the National Axe Throwing League, and they're like a governing body, and they all join, and then they have like, you know, skills competitions and, you know, championships and all stuff, and we work a lot with them. We cater all their events, so it's a lot of fun.
That's so cool, Lawrence. Yeah. Thank you so much for everything and for your passion and your the drive, and just I'm so excited for you, and I'm excited to come up there and try. It's I think everyone should, and I'll put addresses and maps and stuff for people so they know.
Super cool. That's awesome. I'm glad we finally made it work.
I know. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. It was like, and it's better happen now. I mean, when we first started talking about this, it was still wintertime up here. So if he does the interview now, it's going to look like I'm, you know, doing barbecue in Alaska.
No, but I should. We'll catch back in like 5 months from now, so that way we can do like a little snippet.
The winter version, That's when you really test how much people want to cook barbecue. When it's minus 30, and you're trying to run the fire, and you're like, "This sucks."
Yeah, we'll see if your smile is like a little bit smaller.
Yeah, exactly. I'm blowing because it's summertime.
Exactly. Well, cool. We'll have a great week. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Kevin.